Hello, and welcome to another episode of Shipping and Handling. I'm your host, Jennifer Udden.
And I'm your other host, Bridget Smith.
So yeah, you found us at the end of apparently a five-day bender for Bridget.
It has not been a five-day bender. I have had like one or two drinks every day this week because it was Easter on Sunday and I gave up alcohol for Lent and I'm just very glad to have it back in my life. So I have been celebrating Cheers. Slowly.
Cheers. Well, I salute your newfound lack of sobriety. This afternoon, I was like, I don't know about wine for tonight. She's like, I guess. And then I was like, okay, you can get some. She's like, yay!
That's not exactly how it went. I was just surprised that you, because you're usually the one going wine all the time. You're the one who started giving up alcohol for Lent and then dropped that.
Yes, I did. Sorry, Jesus. So anyway, there's been some interesting stuff in the news, the very small time news this week. Starting with the news that UTA had signed a Wattpad author to...
Or signed Wattpad.
Yeah, I'm still not 100% clear on what actually happened there. But
yeah.
What the basics of what happened are that an author who had written a three-book, multi-part RPF epic...
RPF is a real person
fan fiction.
Yeah.
About One Direction. Was picked up for film representation by UTA, which is United Talent Agency?
Something Artists? Like that. Major.
Big major Hollywood agency. And so it got me sort of going down the rabbit hole of research of what exactly Wattpad is, because I'd sort of heard it talked about, but I didn't really know what it was, which means that I'm officially an old, because this is apparently what all the kids are doing these days. It just opened up a lot of questions for me about stuff.
And copyright and the ethics of making a movie based on a story about a real person. I'm still a little creeped out by that. Presumably they're going to have someone else playing.
Well, they're also changing his name because in the story I started reading the story.
So they're doing some real hack job filing the serial numbers here.
I guess. I mean, is it even filing the serial numbers when everyone knows how it started? It's the same thing about, you know, I guess 50 Shades of Grey, like everyone kind of knew that it was Twilight fanfic.
Yeah, but it's also not real, it's only vaguely Twilight fanfiction. It's Twilight AU. Mm-hmm. There are no vampires or werewolves in that book.
Thank God. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? I unfortunately can't imagine, and I don't like imagining it.
Yeah.
Well, to me, I thought it was... Well, because one of the things that you said earlier is, like, did they sign with Wattpad or did they sign with the author? Mm. And this is a question that if anyone actually knows the answer to, I would love to hear...
Well, there seemed to have been some discussion over which it was.
Which it was. Because if they signed with Wattpad, then that has some sort of troubling implications for me. Because if Wattpad can represent itself as the owner of anything posted on its site...
Mm.
Then that's a problem.
That is a huge problem.
But what I, the link that I sent you earlier that Andrea Phillips shared with me was basically a link to their sort of copyright terms of service. And they sort of are conflating copyright with rights in some cases, which sort of, you know, they say that they register copyright for you in some cases.
I think that they said they don't register
copyright. They don't do it, okay.
And you, if you want to, you can do it yourself, and they, like, provided a link to how to do that. But they said this basically will serve as proof in case you need to file any copyright claims that it was written when you say it was written.
Yeah. And, I mean, the difference between copyright and the rights to your work are two different things. I mean, copyright is the thing that protects the work from being... copied or stolen or plagiarized or, you know.
And it exists. You have copyright or at least can claim copyright to your work as soon as it's written down. You don't even need, it doesn't need to be published. If you put it on paper, you can claim copyright, but you should also, it's very helpful to have some sort of proof of when it was written, because otherwise if someone else writes it around this or like steals it, then you have no proof of, I wrote this thing on my paper before you.
But I think that there is a difference between, because I get a lot of, usually paper queries of people that have filed copyright on their work before
You don't need to do that.
You don't need to do that. Like, I'm a literary agent, not a writer. I'm not going
to
steal your shit.
Yeah. Like, if I were taking queries in order to steal people's work, there are just so many better ways of spending my time and making money.
Oh, my God.
Like, if I were running a scam, that is not the scam that I would be running.
Right? But the rights to your work are a completely different thing. So, like,
right to publish, right to
film. And I think that it was really cool that Wattpad had the three different options. I think it was all rights reserved, meaning like no one can do anything with it, and the most you can do is do like a cover or
People can write fan fiction of your fan fiction.
People can write fan fiction of your fan fiction, but then like some rights reserved is, you know, slightly more.
There was a Creative Commons.
Yeah, that was the most lenient.
No, there was the most open, right? The most open was public domain. You could register it as public domain, meaning you don't own any rights.
Yes. So I imagine what happened is this author either did the first or second option. I would imagine if they were
either all rights reserved or public or Creative Commons.
Yes, that's what I would think.
I wonder if we can look this up.
I've done some Googling today, but and Twitter is being less than forthcoming, and it's also being less than forthcoming with questions. So if
y'all don't want to talk
to us anymore, that's totally fine. But you know,
we can just sit here and talk to ourselves.
Which, you know, but one of the things that I thought was interesting was how I'm only familiar with like AO3, the Archive of Our Own. Like that's really the only platform that I've been familiar with in the last like 4 years.
I don't really know the recent ones. I'm familiar with fanfiction.net,
which is a terrifying hellscape of like hard to navigate nonsense.
Yep.
But Wattpad, I mean, very shiny. Lots of opportunities for like collaboration. There was lots of lots of people putting stuff up there. Lots and lots of One Direction fanfiction. This is another thing that I am just too old. I'm just too old.
You wrote Hanson fanfiction.
I didn't write it. I read it. I read a great deal of it, and much of it was very well written. Then I got older. You know, it's just one of those things where like I don't ever begrudge people their pleasures.
Yeah.
Because there is something out there for everyone. Mm-hmm. But once that pleasure is turned into a movie.
Yeah.
I just feel there's a line. I don't know. Am I just being too much of a curmudgeon here?
It's possible.
I feel a little bit like an old lady on her lawn going, like, get off my lawn. Or like seeing kids skateboarding and saying like, that's not how you skateboard. But like, I don't know how to skateboard. Like, what is that?
Well, just earlier today I was
skateboarding.
No, someone posted some link on Facebook about kids who were putting like Burt's Bees.
Oh, is that really a thing?
Eyelids.
Is that a
it
thing?
It was a news article.
Is that the thing about like vodka tampons? Like,
yeah, basically anything that's about like kids these days and their weird drugs is probably false.
Well, yeah,
pretty safe assumption.
And I think too the thing that really struck me about this One Direction story because I started reading it is how much it resembled like every piece of Hanson RPF I had ever read. It's called Hanfic, by the way, because
I see.
But you know, it's like self-insertion.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
At its absolute apex, you know, the character is a stand-in for the author,
and the reader.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a person, it's know. I feel like that's one of the primary reasons for writing RPF is because it's something you can actually imagine happening to you in your real life, and you want it to, and so you put yourself in. It's a little bit less jarring than when, say, it's self-insert Harry Potter fan fiction.
Well, it's interesting, too, because apparently, you know, on the other end of the spectrum, everything that because I have a bunch of friends who are really into One Direction fandom as well, and then they, you know, read a lot of band fic. I really hate that I just use air quotes there. Like, I feel like I should, you know, be thinking about my IRA and, like, whether or not I'm getting in a fiber or something. But like the stuff that's on AO3 is like all them having sex with each other. There's no female characters to be seen. And is that like an age thing or is that like,
I think it might be,
I don't, because there's like a lot of really pervy 13-year-olds out there, like writing that's their true. Shit in their basement. So like, I don't necessarily think that it's just, you know,
yeah,
grizzled old ladies like ourselves.
in our ancientness.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, we were talking about copyright.
We were.
Back in the day.
So, you know.
And one thing that I was thinking about regardless of whether or not, of like which rights choice the author of this fic made, the fact that Wattpad is involved at all is extremely interesting to me. Because especially since it brought up all these questions about, you know, like the Kindle Worlds deal on, which they've recently expanded. I can't remember which other...
Kurt Vonnegut. Kurt Vonnegut is your answer.
Okay. Because I was going to say, it was something that is no longer run by Alloy Entertainment, which was all of the first worlds that they opened
up. Was it Vampire Diaries?
Nope, that's Alloy.
Okay. No longer run by Alloy.
Yes.
Yeah, they're expanding beyond.
Pretty Little Liars and
yeah, all they're expanding beyond that world.
Yeah.
And if you're not really familiar with Kindle Worlds, that's where they have they've made deals with companies to allow people to write and sell stories in those universes on mm-hmm. Amazon through the KDP program. They do have some rules. There's no, I think there's no sex allowed.
I believe so. Yeah.
I think there's no sex. I think there's no, you know, out of canon typical violence.
Yeah. Or, and I think there's no, like, you can't do AUs.
Well, what on earth is the point? But I think the difference that I see between Kindle Worlds and Wattpad, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know about Wattpad, so they may have their own sinister shadowy figures to deal with. But you know, with Amazon, anytime you put anything up on Kindle Worlds, you do not own any of the rights to that.
Yeah.
And you can only continue making money on it as far as they will let you.
Yeah. And it seems very much like a way to monetize fan enthusiasm.
But I don't know anyone who's an actual fan who's doing it. It's more like authors, other authors, like established authors, trying it out as like a money-making.
Sure.
Get it.
But it also seems weird to me that anyone would pay for fan fiction when you can get it all over the internet for free.
That's the thing, is that you can get it like 100% for free in so many places.
I don't know why you would do that. Like, it's not even the question of pirating a book or a TV show rather than paying for it. It's just like, no, this started as a free thing and it's not. And like the people who read and write fan works are also the people who buy all the books and spend lots of money on extras.
The DVDs and the cons. And
all of that sort of stuff. So it's not, it's like, they're the opposite of pirates.
I mean, piracy is usually stage one. Like, I don't know a single fan who hasn't, like, pirated a show, like, while it's still going. But then the DVDs come out, it's like purchase.
Buy all this. And I'm thinking, like, with Harry Potter, you start writing fan fiction after you've bought all the books.
Yes.
Or have bought all the books that are currently available, as was my case.
Well, I think, you know, but I think that this brings up some interesting, you know, questions. I know why people shouldn't get paid for fan fiction, because they don't own those characters. And they don't. But in the sense of it just being a sort of pure labor.
Yeah.
You know, I can really see why people would be attracted to a model that would, you know, give them money for writing something that
absolutely.
They love.
I totally understand.
Especially if it were endorsed.
I completely understand writing and trying to sell it. Like, if someone is allowing you to make money off of your writing, I don't know why you wouldn't try, but I also don't understand how the market is going to support this.
Yeah, I don't know who's going to be on the other side of that equation.
Yeah, exactly.
But, it's just, it's a strange new world we live in, and I think that, you know, so many companies are trying to get in on, you know, the fan capitalization, and they're doing it in such weird ways.
Yeah, because like, fans are totally willing to throw their money at you.
They're also fickle as fuck. You know, they will turn on you, like, you know,
and like violently.
Yeah,
the enthusiasm goes to hatred very quickly.
Oh my god, I wish I could find. There's this one quote. It was like, you know. We are, you know, fans are so devoted to the story, to the one true story, until you fuck it up and they turn on you. I really wish I could remember where it came from, but
And I do remember there was one I can't even remember the context for this. I think this was back when I was in House fandom, which was like 2008.
Oh my god, there's a, I guess there is a House fandom.
Yeah. This was back when the show was actually good and quite popular.
I never watched it. My dad would watch it, and like, he watched a couple of episodes, and he's a doctor, so he'd just be like, this is just terrible. this is just terrible.
Completely understandable. They'd like switched half the cast out halfway through, which sort of made sense in terms of the characters were residents and would, you know, logically be leaving their jobs, but they didn't have any of them leave in the way of, oh, my residency is up and I'm going to go find a job.
I've got to move to Iowa, you know.
Yeah, no, it was all like personal drama stuff, and I was like, this, and then they completely replaced them and it was just bad. But there was one point where they had characters doing things that did not seem supported by the things that we had seen them do before.
They were a little OOC?
Exactly. So there was a whole argument over whether characters, like, the characters in canon can act out of character, or if it's necessarily in character because it's happened in canon. And I, even then, this was before I worked in publishing, and I'm still like, well, they can act in a way that's out of character based on what we've seen of them, and it can be unsupported by the previous text, and therefore we are totally within our rights to see it as out of character actions.
Yeah.
Because there's no context for it. It needs to be supported by the text.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know what you mean. It's, you know, it's, I sometimes just don't know, because at the same time, it's like, you know, I think it's kind of weird that RPF is being made into a movie, but how cool for that author.
Right?
Like, how exciting that this thing is. Because they're really fucking long, too. Like, I think the first one has, like, 100 chapters.
Oh, my God.
And, like, well, I mean, they're extremely short chapters. But, like, you know, it's, like, at least 60,000 words, you know. Yeah. And then there's two more. You know, I can, that's a labor of love. And,
absolutely.
You know, anything that keeps people tuned in, because, like, you know, there's subscriptions and people read it serially, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. What are we going to do, Bridget? What are we going to do? Mm-hmm. Well, because the other side of the coin that I think we alluded to briefly is, you know, why can't you get paid for writing something in someone else's universe is because someone else owns the copyright on those characters in that situation.
Yeah.
Technically, Joss Whedon doesn't own the rights to any of the characters from Firefly. He owns the rights to the show, but he doesn't own the rights to the characters. So he can only do stuff in the Firefly universe if he either uses different characters or, like, I don't know, sells his soul to Fox or something, you know, and creators don't always get to keep those rights.
No. It's, and then there's also works for hire, where you get pulled in as a writer to work in a pre-existing universe. We have one client who writes the novelizations for a TV show. And so he is also, you know, a mystery writer in his own right, but they pulled him in and they were like, we think you're a good writer. We'd like you to do this work for hire. And so obviously he doesn't own any of the characters. He can't own any of the characters. And so it's interesting to look at contracts and things. And obviously I can't disclose any details of any of this, but to see,
item 61 author avers in their own blood that they will never attempt to monetize.
Yeah, but it's the contracts for works for hire are sort of painful for me to read as an agent.
Yeah, because you want your client to do
everything and like have everything, and it's like, no, I don't own any of this.
Yeah,
none of this is mine. And it's also there seems to be a growing market for IP works in publishing.
Yes, and IP is intellectual property, which is something that's developed by a publisher, and they find an author to write it. And actually, there are many, there's a range of people that do it, ranging from the shitty to the, like, the almost exactly like a real...
Well, I believe Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants was developed as an IP.
Yes.
But then, Anne Brashears was the editor who developed it, and then she just decided she was going to write it herself rather than hiring someone else to write it. And that worked out extremely well for her and for all of us.
Yeah, well, yes. And I think that the most interesting case is the Alloy Entertainment Vampire Diaries saga, in which the original author of the Vampire Diaries was kicked off the series and then via Kindle Worlds
is now writing another book in this series. That is one thing Kindle Worlds is good for.
That is punk. That's a way to get your own back. I really approve of that. Because that's the thing, is, you know,
they must have known that was a possibility, though, when they made it available for Kindle Worlds.
I mean, I don't know. That's a...
I wonder if that ever came up in the conversations over at Alloy.
Who knows? Honestly, who knows? I mean, the thing is that with, you know, intellectual property and work for hire, you know, you have so little control over what happens to the thing once you do it that, you know, of course it's extremely wrenching to be taken off a project, but like that's the breaks, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a shitty agreement, and I'm not defending the agreement, but because I think that she went back and asked for more money and they were like, no.
Apparently the last book she wrote also sort of went off the rails, is what I've heard.
I've only read like the first one, and I've seen like maybe 4 or 5 seasons of the television show. However many seasons there are, I've maybe seen all of them. Stefan, you're so hot.
Well, what I've heard is that the last book she wrote, I don't know exactly what the terms were, and obviously I have no idea what the was going on with the contracts and all that. But apparently the book that she wrote was sort of like Bizarro Land Vampire Diaries, and everyone was extremely unhappy with it, and so that was part of why she got kicked off. I don't know if she did it intentionally because they weren't giving her more money
a good question. Did they publish this book?
Yes.
Well,
there were apparently like weird, there was weird stuff going on before they did, and then they did. I don't know. I don't know. Is all weird gossip.
armchair contracts negotiations. Yeah.
And you know, I'm not a vampire person, so I've never read any of them. So really, take all of this with all of the salt you can get.
All of the salts. But I mean, so that's why when you query me with a Star Trek novel, which happens all the time.
Really?
Yeah, Star Trek all the time.
Oh dear.
And actually, oddly enough, like, what was the other one? I want to say it was like Terminator. I get Terminator queries all the time.
That's weird. Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't, but my boss does. But like, you know, that's nothing we can even sort of...
Can't do anything with that.
Yeah.
No.
But if you query me and say like, hey, I have this work of fan fiction that has, you know, over 200,000 hits on AO3 and, you know, this many bookmarks, and I've scraped the serial numbers and I want to turn it into a published book, then I'm like, hello, I'd like to talk to you about that, please.
Especially if it starts as AU, which I've talked about this before, but I sort of sometimes feel like AU stories are original stories that sometimes get slotted into a fandom so that they can get people to read them.
Yes.
And so then if it's an AU, that is, you had to, like, alter the serial numbers by hand in order to make it fanfiction, then it's really easy to turn it back into the non-fanfiction form.
Yeah.
Which, this is sort of how I feel about 50 Shades.
Yeah. I just really love fanfiction, guys. I just really do. I've been joking all week on Twitter that all I really want to read this week is 50,000 word epics about Bucky Barnes adjusting to the 21st century and like having intimacy issues. Like, that's all I want. You know, so just FYI for all you,
So if you have any like weird time travel, tragic fix for angst fix for
angst,
Gente,
not tragic.
Yeah.
Happy ending.
But lots of feelings along the way.
Lots of feelings. Yeah. It's just, it's a weird world we live in.
Yeah.
We never got a chance to go back and talk about character death from our episode from the other week because the How I Met Your Mother finale aired after we recorded that episode.
Oh my god.
And
yes.
I had just started watching How I Met Your Mother, so I didn't feel nearly as betrayed, but I was also like, why would I waste my time? If you have a care about spoilers, stop.
And you haven't heard the spoiler.
And you haven't heard the spoiler for the end of How I Met Your Mother, just stop right now and fast forward to like 5 minutes from now, maybe. I don't know. But what ends up happening is you meet the mother in the last season.
You spend the whole season getting to know her.
Getting to like her.
And Kristen Milioti is so charming.
Adorable. She's like she's like a little anime figure. She's like precious moments, like huge eyes, shiny teeth, like adorableness.
I hope she gets tons and tons of work from this because I would watch her in lots of stuff. I think she's so charming.
And then she dies.
Yep. Only she does. She doesn't even really die on screen. She dies off screen 7 years ago, in the like present day.
And then Ted's kids are like, "You should go after Aunt Robin."
It's like,
despite the fact that Robin has had all this really great emotional and character development along the way, and
they spend like
so much time getting you invested in that fucking relationship with fucking Barney.
The entire final season is about investing the viewer in Robin and Barney's relationship and getting the viewer to like the mother. And then the finale, they're like, never mind, none of that matters. And, you know, the finale that it seems like they filmed the thing with the children, the final scene with the children, after, I think, season 3?
Yeah, they filmed it, like, 6 years ago.
Because, obviously, the actors have now aged well out of that time period, and would actually be, Ted has kept his children on the couch for 10 years. But, so they filmed this final season, I think in season 3, or the final scene in season 3. And back then it would have made sense. Back then it would have been a good choice, but even at the end of last season, it might have made sense. But after the final season, that was just upsetting everything that they had been building.
Yeah.
For 20 episodes.
And, you know, knowing how it ends, and knowing, you know, just watching the first season, knowing how it ends, is a betrayal of that first season. Because, like, it also just is like, what's the point of the show? The show isn't called How I Got Over Your Dead Mom and Started Banging Your Aunt. Yeah. That's not what the show's called. But, no. Whatever. Yeah. It made the death of Beverly Katz look like really well planned in comparison. I was like, you died nobly, Beverly.
You died for actual story reasons.
Yes.
And like actually doing something. You did not have some mysterious wasting disease off screen.
Yeah. I was, speaking of fridging a character, someone pointed out on Tumblr that in the first Captain America movie, it is Bucky Barnes who is fridged. And I was just like, that is the most amazing thing anyone's ever pointed out to me.
I also saw something that was in the story of Peggy Carter, Steve Rogers gets fridged.
Yes! And I'm so glad that she's getting her own show.
Yes! Oh my god.
Let me preemptively set the DVR I don't have for Agent Carter.
Oh my god. 1940s Lady Spies, I'm in.
I am so there. I've seen that little Agent Carter short so many times. Have you seen that?
I don't think so.
Oh my god. It's this little, like, 4-minute short where Peggy, post the war, is sort of like an office girl at like a SHIELD outpost, and she's sort of like chafing. Oh my god, Josh Lyman, I think, is the guy. Bradley Whitford. Bradley Whitford. I mean, he's just, you know, he's Josh Lyman.
He's Josh Lyman.
But so he's her sort of like smarmy supervisor. And then one night late, after he's asked her to, like, you know, file something because he's a dick, the secret phone rings and she sort of takes a mission on her own.
Oh.
And it's so good.
Awesome.
And it's like 4 minutes, but it's really fabulous. But Bucky Barnes is fridged and Steve Rogers is fridged and oh god, I just love Captain America.
And then Coulson is fridged.
He is fridged.
Yeah,
he's fridged.
Absolutely.
He's fridged for like the man pain of an entire group of people. Yeah.
Including one woman.
Actually technically two.
Yeah.
But Maria Hill's like, I got your number.
Yeah.
They were in his locker. And how much you want to bet that when Coulson got out of, like, the hospital, he was like, thanks for ruining my fucking mint
right?
cards, my own blood, you dickbag. Those were worth a lot of money.
I haven't actually watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I feel like I should now.
Yeah. Apparently it's gotten good instead of just boring.
Well, apparently everyone who gave up on it, including myself, were fools because we were being played quite handily.
They were intentionally making the show tedious?
Well, apparently the guy, who I just thought was like the beigest piece of beige to ever beige his way around a television screen, apparently he's the one who turns out to be like a Hydra agent. Which I think is interesting, because he's ostensibly the, like, protagonist of that show?
Okay.
I don't know. I haven't seen it, so I don't know if that's true.
The Joss Whedon's type young girl was.
According to Tumblr GIFs, which is the only thing I know about the show right now, that is not the case.
Okay.
I know, she is so Joss Whedon's type.
Yeah.
It's weird. Yep. He's trying to make Amy Acker. He needs to stop. I think she's even in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this season. Just like, stop it, Joss Whedon.
I like her well enough, but I...
God, just like, slow your roll. But yeah, Captain America, really great.
Yeah.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's how you do, like, long-term world building. Like, the Marvel Universe is so smart about...
And they've done it through multiple genres. Like, every different character has, like, in their own individual movies... They're basically different genres. So, like, Captain America has his, you know, spy movies.
Jaunty war movie, and then, like, 3 Days of the Condor, complete with Robert Redford.
And Iron Man has his classic action movie type stuff, and...
Thor has Thor's... whatever happens there.
Whatever the hell that is.
5 minutes of staring sadly off into the sunset while...
Shirtless.
While water drips down your torso.
Yeah, I want, you know, Black Widow to have her own movie, and I want more female heroes to.
But if they're gonna keep up with the man candy, I'm totally 100% on board.
They are fully on board with using the female gaze as a filmmaking tool, and I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Although someone pointed out the other day that Chris Evans has the shoulder to waist ratio of a Dorito, which is 100% true. He is the waist of a dainty Victorian lady. Yes, and the shoulders of a linebacker. Well, we're at the 34-minute mark, and since I don't think we have any questions from Twitter.
Oh, I do have one.
I don't have one.
She only tagged me in it. I think she cut out the other two tags. But from Karen Caldwell, who's at Karen Caldwell, if a querying writer already has a full requested fulls out, should she or he mention it when sending to any others who request? Seems like bragging, or are you trying to hurry them up if you say something?
Yes.
But like, you're hiding info if you don't. Don't mention it in a query. Do mention it if they request the full manuscript. Say, like, you don't...
Oh, see, I would want to know.
When they... went in the query?
Yeah.
Oh, I wouldn't do anything for me, but...
But just to know. I mean, just... Yeah. The thing is, it's not one of those things, like, it's going to be, like, an automatic request, but, like, you want to know.
Yeah. I don't necessarily want to know until... Because sometimes I get queries where it's like, this manuscript has been requested from 8 different people. And I'm like, well, I don't feel like fighting for it. But when actually I started putting this in my request letter is when I request a manuscript, I do want to know if there are other agents who are considering it. If you have it out with other people. Just so, like, I can... anticipate if I think you're going to email me in like 3 or 4 weeks and say I've got an offer.
Well, this is how I think about it. It's not information that hurts.
That's true.
And if you include it and an agent doesn't care about it, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But if you include it and an agent does care about it, it helps.
That's true.
So,
yeah.
Because an author may have, you know, in their first round of querying, a bunch of agents may have requested and then they never responded. Mm-hmm. So they're doing more queries. So yes, technically they have one out there, but it's not like...
The other thing is, if you send me a query and I you mention that other agents have requested it, I wonder how far down your list I am.
That's also
like,
true.
To be fair, I should not be at the top of your list. If I am at the top of your list, you're probably doing querying wrong. I hope that you would want to sign with me if I offered. I hope that I give off an aura of personal and professional approachability and competency and all of that stuff, but there are a lot of people who have a lot better records than I do.
But you know, that doesn't necessarily matter. A. And B, you know, maybe they and you know, for us it's different because we're like really super out there.
Yeah.
But there may be agents out there that, you know, a new agent might pop up, this author might see them, they might think, okay, well, you're new, but it looks like you want everything that I have.
Yeah.
So I'm going to query you. You know, I just don't feel like it's that big of a deal. I feel like it's good information to include, but it's not information that's going to, like, ruin your chances either way.
Yeah. Well, let me...
We're just like, you're wrong, Jen. You're wrong.
To answer Karen, who specifically asks, should you mention it when sending to any others who request? Yes.
Yes.
Do definitely. Mention it in the cover letter when you're sending the full manuscript to agents who have requested it. In the query, it's up for debate, but it's...
But I think it's fine.
Yeah, I'm not going to reject you because other people have requested your manuscript, so... Of all the stupid reasons to reject.
Basically asking, you know, can a book be categorized in one age category, like YA or adult? Mm-hmm. Is it just based on the age of the protagonist or based on the age of the reader or what? And then he points out that there are things that are aimed at, like, young children where the protagonists are, like, 16, although the examples he uses are movies, which is a little different.
Yeah. Yeah, I can get into lots of... I get actually quite upset at the fact that Pixar movies are intended for children and do not tell children's stories for the most part. So we can get into fights about that.
I think you're on your own there. I certainly didn't give a shit when I was five, so.
And I know, but, like, things like The Incredibles, that's a story about a midlife crisis. And just because it's acceptable for children doesn't mean that, well, I think it's unfair to not allow, in the only media that is actually intended for children, to not tell children's stories. Children don't get to tell their own stories. And so when you're targeting them with media and you're saying, here is something specifically for you to tell stories that have nothing to do with them, is unfair to me. But that's, I get into lots of fights about this and I'm usually the only one who says that. So.
I don't have a dog in this race.
We can move on.
Yeah.
But one of the examples Colton gives in the email is of whether or not a book can be marketed as YA because the themes are YA, even though a character's in their 20s. And, you know, the thing is, I think characters can always be marketed up, but they can't necessarily be marketed down. So, like, a child protagonist can be an adult novel, but an adult is not usually a children's novel. Sometimes you can tweak that, especially with certain classic books. But if your protagonist is in their 20s, it's probably not going to be YA, even though the themes are. You can have a teenager as a main character in an adult novel, but I don't think you can have the adult as a main character in a YA novel.
Yeah. I agree. Mm. I agree.
Okay.
I agree.
And theoretically, new adult should be characters in their 20s experiencing specific things that are sort of similar to YA, so.
I actually read a new adult romance the other day.
Yeah?
I liked it.
Which one?
It's actually over there on the on the stack. It's called Lick. It's one of my favorite tropes, the woke up married.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, so they wake up married, and, you know, he's the lead singer of a band, and she's like, I'm a waitress.
Okay.
Okay. And then feelings, and romance, and
obviously,
lots of sex.
Of course.
Beautiful mansions and stuff. But it was very well written. It's by Kylie Scott, and I got it from an editor on a lunch. It's really good.
Okay.
I haven't read the other one that she gave me yet. But, New Adult is a fun... I'm looking forward to see what happens.
Yeah, I'm looking because to see it expand from romance.
And because I think that there's a lot that could be done with it. And because there are so many people reading it, it's only really a matter of time before it expands.
Yeah, for example, I think that Codename Verity should be classified as new adults because it's about these young women who are obviously not going through teenager things, but they're sort of exploring, like, trying to figure out their place in the world and trying to solidify, and they even talk about, they have multiple conversations about what do we do when the war is over, what, now that we've been a pilot and a, you know, communications expert. Like, how do we go back and be secretaries, which is basically the only thing we can do because it's 1940s England? How do we stop being all that we are? How do we find our place in the world? And that's a very, very new adult theme.
Yeah.
And so I absolutely think that it should count as new adult. But, you know, Disney Hyperion doesn't actually publish new adult, and it doesn't, and Codename Verity doesn't abide by most of the requirements of new adult at the moment, which is to say there's literally no romance in it. So it's, unless you are, like me, an avid Maddie Jamie shipper.
Well.
They have tiny pilot babies, Jen.
You're adorable. Never change. Well, I think that's all the questions we have.
Yeah.
So shall we move on to talking about what we read this week?
Let's do it.
What did you read this week?
Well, I'm currently about 75 pages into Ancillary Justice by Anne Lemke.
Ooh, it's probably going to win the Hugo.
Yeah. Either that or The Wheel of Time will get it for being a series.
You know, I mean, obviously, it's a tremendous achievement. Mm-hmm. It's a big series. It's not fair.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's also not fair that Robert Jordan never got one.
Yeah.
However, he did never get one.
Yeah.
And he's dead.
And he's still not going to get one.
And he's dead now. So, and he's not going to get one. So, I also think that because the nominees is here, like, there's a really interesting slate of nominees, apart from one or two sort of douche waffly outlier, which we will
the people who are about to be outvoted fighting back. Like, it's not worth talking about because
it's nonsense.
It's an extremely vocal attempt to take something back when they're about to lose it.
Yeah.
And it's...
Yeah, not gonna win.
No.
But otherwise, I think that the slate of nominees is really interesting.
Yeah.
And so I would want Anne Lecky to win because...
And, you know, she does such fascinating things. And the fact that this book is getting a lot of people talking about it, a lot of people really excited and absolutely loving it. And that's, I think that's
and people
really
I don't know who
thing.
Aren't into science fiction.
Really?
Have, like, been like, have you heard about this book called, like... Ancillary Justice? I'm like, yeah! A woman who used to be a ship! And they're like, yeah.
And everyone is referred to as she. It's great.
Just so great!
So, I'm 75 pages into it. And so, if you haven't read it, it starts out with two different timelines. And I haven't... I'm only, like, four chapters in, so I've had two chapters in each timeline. And so I haven't really... quite gotten into either yet, which is one of the problems of having two timelines, and why it takes a lot of skill to pull it off. But it's very well done so far, and so I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. I think it's I'm really excited about reading it.
Cool.
What are you reading, Jen?
I am about 260 pages into Caliban's War, which is the second book in the Expanse series. I had, around the time of the Singularity and Co-event last year, I picked up Leviathan Wakes.
I remember this.
I got like 100 pages in, and then I sort of got sidetracked. I think it's because the book it's a really big book, so I was sort of like loath to carry around the subway.
Even though it was an arc, so it was a paperback.
No, they're just trade paperback. Orbit publishes them as trade paperback, so they're just like fucking.
Oh, okay, but they're still huge.
I'll demonstrate.
They just don't weigh quite as much as the hardcover one.
I mean, I just can't really tell the difference because like this is 600
it's like
pages,
2 inches wide.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's huge. It's it's the heaviest thing in my bag right now. I like took out everything. Like, but so I'm about 250 pages in. It's the second book. I had not really gotten into Leviathan Wakes just because I. As I said, hadn't been carrying it around. But then I took it home with me when I went to this conference a couple weeks ago, and I read it on the plane.
Ah, plane reading.
And I zoomed through it. I think I read it. I got on the plane in Houston, and I got off in Boston, and I only had, like, maybe 100 pages left. And I was just like, I have never been this in... I have never wanted to know more what happened in a series. Harry Potter, obviously. But it's just... I mean, it's tremendously well-written. The characters are... very interesting. And if you don't know what happens in the first book, it's basically it's two alternating points of view. One, Holden is the captain of a ship who, when he responds to a distress beacon, inadvertently triggers this interstellar war between Earth and Mars. Because of what he finds on the derelict ship and what happens to the ship later. And then the other point of view is what in anyone else's hands would be an extremely stereotypical, hard drinking, hard boiled noirish detective on an outer asteroid belt colony, and he has been hired to find a missing girl who was last seen on the ship that Holden went to investigate. And it's about politics and war and like there's this really amazing like bio-horror element to it that's like just mind-blowing.
I need to read this.
And one of the things that I really like about this is initially I was a little bit like, oh Lord, because there's four point of view characters instead of two. It's awesome. And it's also, like, one of the most diverse science fiction, like, space opera books I've read in, like, a really long time.
Okay.
You know, people who are explicitly sort of, like, this person is not white.
Yeah.
You know, I think the one, and everyone's sort of, like, mixed race in the future, so there's sort of that element to it. Yeah. But, like, you know, one woman, she's like, my ancestors were Samoan, so I'm, like, 6 feet tall and I weigh 300 pounds, and that's really hard when I'm a marine on Mars. Like, you know, and then another point of view character is a diplomat from, I forget where, like, I want to say, like, Bangladesh.
Okay.
And then another guy who's, like, a Chinese scientist. And I was just like, that's so cool.
Awesome. Yeah.
Like, it's so neat. Like, it's,
And the author, James S.A. Corey, is two people.
Yeah, one of whom is apparently George R.R. Martin's assistant.
Oh, okay.
But, oh my God, it's really fascinating. And the fourth one comes out this summer, so I'm hopefully going to get through this one and Abaddon's Gate before the fourth one comes out.
Yeah.
I hope it's, like, an ongoing series. I hope it's, like, one of those things where, like, every year there's a new book, you know? But,
it's hard when it's 600 pages.
Oh, my God.
Though I suppose it's only about 300 pages each.
That's true. That's a nice way to write a novel. So, you only have to write half of this mammoth tome.
Yeah.
And then before that, the thing that I read was American Elsewhere by Robert Jackson Bennett. No, it wasn't that, actually. The last thing I read was The Martian.
I'm looking...
Apollo 13, the novel.
I'm looking forward to reading this whole series that you've been talking about. But I think, you know, space opera's not 100% my thing. Sometimes I get really into it. Like, I got really into Battlestar Galactica. Though I still haven't finished it because the third season just drags. Fourth season.
Well, this is being turned into a sci-fi series. Oh. And one of the writers is, like, the writer of the original Iron Man movie.
Oh.
So I'm just like...
Nice.
That'll be good.
Thumbs up.
I'm there for that.
Thumbs up. So I'm going to have to read that at some point, but I think it's going to have to wait until a little while after Ancillary Justice, which is, you know, another space opera series.
Yeah. So, is it a series?
There isn't. Yes. There's only one so far, but there's at least one more coming.
Cool.
I believe there are at least three signed up, but I'm not 100% sure on that. You know, Orbit, they like to do series. We appreciate that as agents.
I was going to say, I appreciate them as a reader, too. Yes. Because especially when you find a great world, you know, you want to...
Yeah.
In fan fiction, you want to just stay there.
I think that's part of why it's hard to do fantasy and sci-fi standalones, is because, well, for one, as a writer, you have to do so much work to create the world that...
You don't want to waste it.
Right? You want to spend some more time in it. And then as the reader, you also want to spend more time in a world that you've grown to love. So I think that that's part of why there's so many series in SFF.
Good question. The Martian was a standalone, which I really appreciated. Okay. I would have liked for it to be slightly longer, because if you don't know what it's about, it's basically an astronaut on a mission to Mars is injured and accidentally left behind.
Oh, whoops.
And so then he's like, well, shit. So now I gotta get off of Mars. And he like, knows he can't get off of Mars, but he's sort of trying to figure out, like, okay, well, there's going to be another mission in 4 years.
How can I
survive that long?
Yeah.
And most of it's just, like, his sort of diary of, like, today I tried this thing. Today I tried this thing. And then it sort of switches back to, like, the people on Earth. And there isn't a lot of, like, feelings in it. It's sort of very straightforward, like, this is what we're doing. This is what we have to do to save this guy. And I could have done with a little bit more of that, but it was very, like...
Jen's permanent question is,
but how do they feel? Yeah, I wanted him at some point to be like, I feel terrible about this.
I'm super sad and alone.
I'm super sad, and I'm really sad that I got left behind, and I really wish that I had been eating something other than potatoes, which I miraculously managed to grow with, like, Mars soil.
And somehow did not get scurvy?
He had some other food, I think. I don't know.
Okay.
Well, spoiler alert, he gets off Mars. So yeah, it was a very thrilling read, very technical, and it was originally self-published apparently.
Oh,
which I was very, and the cover is so cool. I left the cover at home.
Ugh. God, you're useless.
Sometimes when Bridget's tipsy, she says things that she doesn't mean, and it's not because she doesn't care.
I think it's that my sarcasm gets more extreme. It is definitely not that I don't care.
It mutates into something else. Something much crueler. And on that note.
That's us
for now.
Note to leave. Bye. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. Ask us more questions or tell us what we're doing wrong.
Yes.
Bye.